Well, good morning. Thanks for braving the icy weather. Looked ominous on the trees anyway, didn't it? If you're here today and you're a businessman or a businesswoman, self-employed, perhaps you're just have a goal for the future. Maybe this teaching this morning is going to be particularly, I think, appealing to you just because of the nuances of the story, the finer points of the parable that we're in studying. Should give you an adrenaline rush this morning, I hope, in light of the challenge that the Lord makes of us. So if you were here with us last week, you know this is the second part of a two-part message series. So let's launch back into where we left off last week in Luke chapter 16. Let's go to the well there. That is Luke chapter 16. We're going to read the whole parable again, beginning in verse 1, and we'll finish that up in verse 13. Luke chapter 16, verse 1. Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling his affairs. One day a report came that the manager was wasting his employer's money. So the employer called him in and said, "What's this I hear about you? Get your report in order because you are going to be fired." The manager thought to himself, "Now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches and I'm too proud to beg. Ah, I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired." So he invited each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asked the first one, "How much do you owe him?" The man replied, "I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil." And the manager told him, "Take the bill and quickly change it to 400 gallons. "And how much do you owe my employer?" he asked the next man. "I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat," was his reply. "Here," the manager said, "take the bill and change it to 800 bushels. The rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. "And it is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of light. Here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then, when your possessions are gone, they will welcome you to an eternal home. If you're faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? And if you're not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? No one can serve two masters. For you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money." This is the word of the Lord to us today, right here in Evansville, Indiana. And we are thankful to Him for it. Before we go any further, would you pray with me? Our Father in heaven, this is your word, and we bow before you asking that you speak to our hearts with it. Father, that you would change our minds, change our attitudes, change our lives with this very hard parable. I ask, God, that you would begin that work in me, in my family. I pray, Lord, that you would transform all of us in light of the way that we should obey what you've said to us here today. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, by way of recap, you'll remember we said last week that one of the reasons you don't hear a lot of sermons on this is because it is a hard parable to interpret, largely because of just a controversy. It just seems so out of character. We said that, you know, some people, you know, in the more liberal wing of the church would say that Jesus didn't even say that. They just put that in there. It's like, well, come on, really? I mean, that's not the way we want to approach the Bible, obviously, because at that point, who's picking and choosing what Jesus did really say, right? And suppose the thing that you need the most in your life, the person leading you into that doesn't believe it. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. No, we want to embrace the Bible and all that it is, and we want to believe that this is a word from Jesus here to us in a parable form, which was so customary to the way he was teaching. Really, the controversy just kind of regards the fact that he says, you know, he's going, okay, look at this sinner here. Look at this dishonest rascal who happens to be a manager of a wealthy landowner. He's a broker. All right? Jesus says, look at this guy. Look at that sinner. Be like him. Really? Right? Is that what Jesus is saying here? And so the hard thing for us to put our minds around is that there is a rabbinical teaching method. There is a thing that Jesus would have been he would have been aware of in that day, and that is to teach from the perspective of a negative example to reinforce or to apply a positive action. That's what's going on here. It's not Jesus saying, here, you be dishonest. Be dishonest like this guy. Of course that's not what he's saying. But what is the lesson for us to learn here? How can we apply from this negative example a positive application? That's what we're going after here. And what you see overarching in this text, what Jesus is calling us into, is an examination of our hearts, as he always does. It isn't just about behavior. It's about what's at the core of our behavior, what's at the motivation of our behavior. What Jesus is saying in this parable is that the way you treat money is a physical expression of a spiritual condition. We said that last week. That the way you treat money, indeed the way you treat any resource that God gives you, but particularly in light of this story, we want to look at money. The way you treat money is a physical expression of a spiritual condition. We said last week that first of all, to be a highly effective giver, you understand that your money is not your money. That everything belongs to the landowner. Everything belongs to the certain rich man, right, who owned a lot of land. Everything belongs to him. Our celestial landowner, our Creator God, it all belongs to him. Highly effective givers approach their resources that way. Secondly, highly effective givers understand that they're accountable, since it's not their money, it's accountable for how they use their money. They're going to be called to account for the way they use their finances. Thirdly, highly effective givers see money as a tool. It's not an idol to worship. It's not something to serve. It's something to be served by. And so they apply money as a tool. It is a tool to be used. And then today, we want to look at number four, first of all. And number four is that highly effective givers understand how much money they need to keep. Highly effective givers know how much money they need to keep. Look at Luke 16, verse 5. So, the dishonest rascal, the shrewd manager, invites everyone in who owes his employer money. He says, come and discuss the situation. Now remember, we said they don't know he's been fired yet. They don't know he's been making it rain wastefully with the money, sowing that money to the wind, whatever that means. Jesus says, that's not the point of the parable. What the point of the parable is much larger. So he asked the first one to come, and he says, how much do you owe my master? The man replied, I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil, a very, very rich sum of product in that day. And the manager told him, so take the bill and slash it in half, cut it in half, change the 800 to 400 now. You can see that guy going, what? Yeah, you take that bill, make it 400 now. Oh man, wow, I'm getting a deal here, right? How much do you now? How much do you, goes to the next guy, how much do you owe my employer? I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat, was the reply. Again, a very large sum of product that will be lucrative in its transfer into money. Here the manager said, take the bill and change it now to 800 bushels, slashing it by 200 bushels. And the guy's going, man, I'm getting a deal, right? As you can just see these guys looking to each other going, what is up with this? You know, this is wonderful. You know, this is an endearing thing to this manager here and perhaps even the landowner. But particularly to this guy, right? We don't know. Maybe the implication is they're even in on the scam. We don't know. But all we know is that they're going to go walk away with more than what they came to the table with. They're not having to give up more, as usually goes with a negotiation. No, they're getting less. They're getting to have to give up less. They get to keep more for themselves. In this case, the first question isn't about what can be given away, but what really needs to be kept. What needs to be kept by the tenant farmers, and what really needs to be kept by the landowner? He said, well, what do you mean by that? Well, see, here's the deal. The manager is slashing quantities based on what he needs to keep for his master, not keep for himself. And the manager is sacrificing his own commission by cutting it in half with the olive oil and cutting it by 200 bushels with the wheat. That's what's going on here. As far as we know, the landowner has no idea exactly how much this guy's getting from these tenant farmers. The bottom line is that he's contracted with them for 400 gallons of olive oil and 800 bushels of wheat. That's what the landowner is expecting to receive from this deal. Because again, as a tenant farmer, what do? Well, they farm the land that the landowner owns, and at the end of the harvest, they gather everything together and they give the landowner a cut. That's the economy back in the context of when Jesus is teaching this parable. So by adding more onto the bill, The broker is getting his commission. Now, they may not know what the agreement is between the broker and the landowner. They may have no, any idea of that. All they need to know is they got to come up with 1,000 bushels of wheat and 800 gallons of oil, and this guy's just showed up and he's just giving them a discount. But what he's actually doing is just cutting off his commission. Why? To save his own hide from prosecution. Because even though he's been fired, once the word, remember we said, bring me the report, bring me the word, get your affairs in order, you're going to be fired. I've heard what you're doing, now get everything else in order. Because if you've been dishonest over here doing whatever is not described in the parable, I want to see what you're doing when it comes to my own management and my own business relationships. And so the guy says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut my commission. I'm going to keep what needs to be kept for the landowner and give it back to him, having required legally in that contractual agreement what belongs to him. I'm also going to endear myself to these guys because merely they think they're getting a deal. It's the same for us, Jesus says. We always start with the question, don't we? We start with the question of how much should I give? Now, anytime I do a series on this, I always have people, they come up to me, you know, do we believe in tithing? Is it 10%, Dale? Is that what I'm supposed to give? Am I supposed to give away 10%? Am I supposed to give away that 10% in total to the church? Or can that be giving be divided up between other things as well, like parachurch kind of things? Well, what do I do with that? And they're expecting me to have all the answers for this, right? Because you are the pastor. Well, what's the bare minimum, Dale? Let's be honest, Dale. What is the bare minimum? What do I need to do to make sure that I'm going to get into heaven, right? That's the way it sounds if we're not careful. I mean, really the heart is how much should we give to be obedient? Because you and I know, oh, please tell me that you do know, that you can give away everything you've got and not make it into heaven, because you can't earn heaven. Only Jesus can do that work. Only Jesus can die on the cross for your sins and pay the penalty that you owe God. You could never come up with that. It is by grace you are saved through faith, and that's not of yourselves. It is a gift of God so that no one can boast about it. It's his work. It's his payment. He satisfied your penalty all because of his work. So please tell me you're not asking that question, how much should you give, so you're somehow you're going to buy a ticket on your own to get into heaven. That's not it at all. No, it's just more comfortable, isn't it, to know what the bare minimum is, right? It's like the kid in the class going, are you grading on a curve here? Is there a curve? Right? Is there a curve? You know? Because I'm sitting next to Bill Brown and Mike Scott, and I know they are going to blow the curve, right? These two guys always blew the curve in my class. Why was I always paired with Bill Brown and Mike Scott? Because they blew the curve, always, in my class. So tell me, how much do I need to make a B in the class? My parents won't ground me if I make a B. What's the bare minimum to make the B, right? That's not what Jesus does at all in his teaching, does he? You want to know what adultery looks like? Jesus says you feel good about the fact that you come home to your wife every night. That's great. But what does your heart reflect? Because I tell you, if you look at a woman to lust after her, you've committed adultery in your heart. Really? You hate someone? You ever put a knife to somebody's throat and ended their life? You ever shot somebody and killed them? Man, that's great that you've never murdered anybody, but have you ever hated them? Have you ever been angry to the point of hatred? Because in your heart, you can also commit murder. Jesus always, he flips the script on us. He always gives us the parable, the paradox in his teaching. He's like, you know, you want to be great? Become small. You want to become the most wanted, popular person in heaven? Be a servant of all. He always flips the script. So the question is, for the disciple of Jesus in this passage, is not how much I should give, but how much should I keep? It's not should I give 10%, it's should I keep 90? And that colors giving from a completely different perspective, doesn't it? And the most highly effective givers understand that it's not in giving the bare minimum that we need to be trying to figure out, but it's how much do we really need to keep? Because it all belongs to God, right? So, I'm not saying you should never ask that question, what should I give? That's obviously a common question. We should ask it sometimes. But what does it mean for you to ask, what should I keep? If we apply the parable, it goes the other way. The Apostle Paul encourages the church in a very similar way. Watch how Paul does this in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 10. For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer. He takes us to the very beginning, again, of an agrarian economy. How do you grow food? You plant seed. And it is God who provides a seed for the farmer, implying what? God owns the seed. And then bread to eat. From the harvest, you get food to eat. In the same way, he will provide and increase your resources so that you produce a great harvest of generosity in you, right? It isn't just about bringing in the friend, carving off 10% off the top. That's not what we're talking about here. Paul, in this passage, Paul says, take it back to the beginning. God gives you the seed. That's on loan. The landowner owns the seed. That's on loan as well. You've got to keep that back to be able to plant next year to do anything. You need your needs met. What's it going to take to feed your family? What's it going to take for you to provide for your own? Obviously, that needs to be set aside. You don't spend grocery money on Nintendo packages, right? You don't spend the rent on a new car. How much needs to be kept so that you can plant next year? How much needs to be kept so that you got the ability to feed your family? Being faithful in these small ways, he will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. The question, how much do I keep? Not how much should I give here. The question is, how much do I really need to keep? So whether you're a businessman or interested in your retirement, investing for your future, that's the question that we need to be asking, right? How big of a garage do you need? Well, I don't know, Lord. I can think of a pretty big garage. God, you give me a big garage and I'll find a way to fill it, right? I can think of a pretty big garage. Jesus speaks to this in Luke chapter 12 when he says in verse 16, he tells another story. He says, a rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. Again, this is an agrarian economy. This makes sense to these people, right? It used to make sense to us in this country. He said to himself, what should I do? I don't know what to do. I don't have room for all my crops. I've got so much. So I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, right? Because he's already asked the question, perhaps. How much should I give? I've taken care of that. Now I've got all this other. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, this guy would make a great American. But God said to him, you fool. You will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for? Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. Look at that. Look at that. Man, that is so convicting, isn't it? It is so convicting. Because I want to walk around knowing that I've given my 5% or I've given my 10%. I want to walk around and say, I've done that. I've done that, you know? But how much more do you really need to keep? The fourth habit of highly effective givers is that they ask that question. Not what's the bare minimum, but what's the maximum I need to possess? I'm surprised some of you aren't getting up right now running out of here. Thank you for not doing that. The fifth effective habit of highly effective givers is that they manage money with an eternal perspective. The reason they ask the question, how much do I need to keep, is because they understand that there's an eternal perspective that's tacked on to that. Long-term security is more important, we learn from this shrewd, dishonest manager. Long-term security is more important than a short-term gain. That's what you're seeing. He's giving up his short-term gain, which looks like a sacrifice to these tenant farmers, for a long-term security. Where do you see that, Dale? Well, look at verse 8, Luke 16 again. The rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. This guy is slick. And it is true, Jesus says. Look at that. And it is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of light. Here's the lesson, Jesus says. You want to know the point of the parable? Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your possessions are gone, they will welcome you to an eternal home. If the world can manage money with a purpose that is temporal, Jesus is saying, if the world is great at managing money for a temporal purpose, then why can't you, as my followers who understand, why can't you manage money with an eternal purpose? Looking not just long term for this world, but looking for a very long term that speaks to eternity, right? And when the money runs out of purpose for this life, after it's over, the one who has used money wisely, we could say the one who has used money generously, relationally, has stored up treasure in heaven. Look at how Jesus says that. He says, use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your possessions are gone, they will welcome you to an eternal home. Why? Because it's through people that you have an eternal investment. Right? The money rots. The material decays. I don't care how airtight your barns are. Rust is going to find a way in. Moths are going to find a way in. I had no idea how sneaky moths were, you know, until my best cashmere sweater last year got pulled out for winter use, and it's full of holes. It's like somebody's burned cigarette holes in my best cashmere sweater. I only had one. My favorite sweater. Loved it. Where'd the moths come from, right? They get in there. They find a way. And once that stuff's gone, it's gone. But relationally, how we use money as a tool, how effective givers use money as a tool. You realize as a church, don't you? You realize as a church that these little faces on the screen up here that we impact with our prayers and with our giving, you realize that they welcome you into an eternal home. You realize that so much of eternity is spent just connecting with the people that you've influenced that you had no idea you influenced. I mean, I think part of the reward looks that way. It's relation. It's the only thing that lasts, y'all. It is the only thing that lasts. People. That's it. They are with you through eternity. There was a shoe store. There was a little guy that just sold shoes faithfully in a little North Carolina town. And he had so much impact on a little kid by the name of Billy Graham that Billy Graham came up, as you well know, even those of you that are perhaps younger, have heard of Billy Graham. You know, the greatest evangelist that our country has ever seen. Sharing the gospel with people, leading people to Christ all over the world. And I believe that little shoe salesman in that little North Carolina town gets the dividends off of that investment. Did he know these people? Did he ever travel to these places and preach? No. But he invested in one who did, so he shares the benefit. Don't be a bit surprised if little children from Rock, and won't be kids, I don't know what they'll be, but I mean, when they're in heaven, they'll be surprised that little or big Ugandan people run up to you and say thank you. That's part of what eternity looks like. Because people are the only long-term benefit of what you impact here in this world. And man, that's convicting, isn't it? That's convicting. Paul shares it very clearly with the church in Ephesians 4 when he says, if you're a thief, verse 28, quit stealing. Instead, use your hands for good, hard work. There's a great Evansville work. The Germans in here are going, yes, yes, he must work harder, harder. Yes. Use your hands for good, hard work. Somewhere there's a grandfather elbowing a grandson going, see there? Don't tell me to pay you anything. Hard work's his own reward. And then give generously to others in need. Don't use foul or abusive language. Look at the switch. Paul's moving now from money to our speech. Give generously to others in need. Don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. What's the point? What's the teaching of this instruction from the Apostle Paul? What's the point of that? It's hard work can produce money to give and money to keep. Hard work can produce a skilled trade to where your hands can be put to service for someone who's unskilled. Even our words, Paul says, can be used as currency. Think about that. Your words
The stuff that comes out of your mouth are commodities. What are you doing with your words? Paul says you can even use your words as currency in this world. It's speaking encouragement. You're speaking either life into people or you're speaking death into people. What are you doing? And don't be that guy that talks different when you're standing next to the preacher. As if I can have some effect or bearing on your good behavior in the midst of a conversation. Burns me up. All my life I've had to deal with, even in high school when people knew that I was, you know, reading my Bible and trying to, you know, become a... They changed their language when they were around me. They said it was out of respect. I don't know why they would think that. I'm just another person just like them. As if they were going to say words that I'd never heard before. Only to see them in conversations when they didn't know I was around, and their language was vastly different. Paul says, watch your words. Don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement. It's a currency to those who hear them. Even your words, y'all, even your words are to be stewarded in this world. And I believe with social media and things like that, man, That is more of a challenge today than it was 20 years ago. Use your words. Use your money. With an eye toward the future. Think about that. Not just long term in this life, but very long term. Highly effective givers ask the question, how much should I keep? And highly effective givers manage their money. They manage their resources. They even manage their words with an eternal perspective. Number 6, highly effective givers recognize that the character of a giver is tested in small ways. Highly effective givers recognize that the character of a giver is tested in small ways. Small sacrificial acts, Jesus says, lead to larger sacrificial acts. Luke 16, verse 10, if you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you're untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? And if you're not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? Highly effective givers understand the character is tested in very small ways. And then lastly, number 7, highly effective givers know that secular stewardship, the things we watch over in this world, reveal a spiritual state of being. They reveal a spiritual state. Highly effective givers understand the people of this world, or Jesus, what he says is the people of this world have given more thought to their temporary lives. Like this dishonest manager, he's given more thought to his temporary life here on earth than the people who are called righteous have given to their spiritual destinies. That's what he's saying here. He said, look at this. If the world can watch over temporary resources like this and get so creative in how to manage them, why can't my followers do that with eternal resources? Luke 16, 13 says, no one can serve two masters. No one can. For you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and an idol. That's really what he's saying. You cannot serve God and make idols out of your resources, particularly money. You can't be enslaved to money and still serve God. Look to God for your security or look to your money for your security. It's got to be either or. It can't be both. It's a story of little Zacchaeus, the tax collector. That's the first story I remember from Sunday school, right? Many of you here growing up, the first song you remember learning that had anything to do with faith was Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see, and as he passed the street that day, Jesus looked up and said, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house someone today, right? And he went and he ate with the sinner, with the despised tax collector, and it changed his life. Zacchaeus says in verse 8, he stands before the Lord, he says, I will give half my wealth to the poor. See, he understands how much he's got to keep, all right, and how much he needs to give away. I'll give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. That could have been arbitrary, we don't know. And if I have cheated people, which I've always thought was funny, I think he should have inserted, and where I have cheated people? Is there either, if is a conditional thing. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Oh, really? No, Zacchaeus, you've cheated people, right? And if I've cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. That's a radically changed human being right there. It's also the story of Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol, if you've read that or seen that story. When our spiritual condition, y'all, is full and healthy, when our spiritual conditions are full and healthy, they overflow with generosity. It reveals a spiritual state of being, right? When you're full of the promises of God, when your faith drives your life in this world, you reveal that, you show that, you demonstrate that. And I just want to challenge you. I mean, this was a huge challenge for me. I don't know that I've ever preached this passage before. Again, it's just one of those you can just kind of avoid, right? Really? We don't need to be avoiding anything in Scripture. And yet, I don't think I've ever preached this before. And I don't think I've ever been confronted, because I've been just like most of you. Is tithing still the thing? Is it still a thing? You know, we do all these gymnastics, right? We keep the stuff out of the Old Testament that we want to apply for our own comfort, and we just kick it back. Well, that's the Old Testament, right? But Jesus, in typical fashion here, y'all, saying, quit trying to do the bare minimum. Quit trying to look for the thing that you think is going to satisfy some ticket punch for heaven. Don't do that. As you look at what you've been given, perhaps the better exercise for all of us here in this congregation isn't how much I should give away, but what do I really need to keep? I think that's the question that leads to a lot of transformation with us here. That's really what I want you leaving with today and thinking about. I know I am. And if you're sitting here and going, okay, what does it look like for us to really get serious about this as a family or a couple? You know, if you're thinking about getting married, man, I encourage you to take advantage of a thing we have here at church called Financial Peace University. It's led by two of our own members here at CFC, Rick and Susie Brown. And, man, I invite you to plug into that. The fact is, we have one going on right now, Financial Peace University. And my friend Andy Hansen, who I work with here, reminded me that, you know what? If there's enough interest for people to want to take seriously their finances and get their finances in order, we'll start another class immediately here. How do I hold on to what God has given me, and how do I let go of what God has given me in light of what He commands me to do as His follower? That's just a great way to look at it, and I hope that you would consider being a part of that class if you haven't ever had any training in how to handle your finances based on God's way. So, again, and please understand me, these two weekends have not been about trying to raise funds for our church. That's not what we're trying to do. God is faithful. God has been faithful through you. Man, we're doing great. You're doing great. But what does it mean for our hearts to be transformed where we see this throughout the spectrum, not just of when we come in here and hand in our gifts, but what does it look for us to apply this form of worship throughout our daily lives? That's what we want to learn to take more seriously, and I pray that these two weekends have helped us do that. Would you pray with me? Our Father in heaven, thank you very much for helping us to hold out things with open hands to you and to say, how can they be invested for eternity? Father, I pray that you would help us not judge your love for us by our circumstances, but that we would judge our circumstances by your love for us and your provision for us. And as we leave this place today, Father, I pray that we would all be reminded, whether we have 5 bags, 3 bags, or 1 bag, Father, it's enough given to us by you to live righteously by. Not just thinking about our temporary lives, but what it means to think toward eternity. So, Father, may we hold not just our money with open hands toward you, but our very lives and everything that makes it up, because it all belongs to you. We thank you for Jesus. We pray in his name. And let the church say, amen. God bless you as you go today, folks. Thanks for coming. Hope to see you next week.